Our nation's founding document, the Declaration of Independence, says that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. In effect, the Creator is a core principle of America's founding. And yet, we live in a day where a lot of the elites that are in major power places in this country don't even believe in God. And now there's a new book, and it's by Dr. Stephen Meyer of the Discovery Institute, and it's called The Return of the God Hypothesis, Three Scientific Discoveries That Reveal the Mind Behind the Universe. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Dr. Meyer, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
It's wonderful to be with you again, Jerry.
Okay, how about a quick comment about God, the Creator, as recognized in the Declaration of Independence, and then we'll get right into the subject of your book.
Well, absolutely. The idea of God is in a very significant way the basis of our public policy, because at the foundation of all our public policy is the idea that human beings are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. And the purpose of government is, according to the founders, to protect those rights. But we have, over the last 100 years, and certainly in our current knowledge culture, the academia, the media, the law schools, the courts, there's a sense in which those institutions are completely secular, and that God has been banished from any consideration as the basis of anything. And yet there is now, and this is the point of the book, there is public evidence that supports the reality of God. Our elites will say it's fine to worship God in private, but keep God out of the public sphere. And yet the founders thought that God was the basis of our public policy, our whole civilization. So one of the, I think, significant implications of the new book that I've written is that there's no reason to keep God out of the public sphere, because there's publicly accessible scientific evidence for the reality of God, just as the founders believed.
All right. And I should add that Dr. Meyer directs the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle. He has written also a book called Darwin's Doubt. We've interviewed him before on that wonderful book as well. It's interesting that we would be discussing the Declaration of Independence here, because one time in a soundbite for D. James Kennedy Ministries TV, where I'm still working as a TV producer and so forth, you gave us a fantastic soundbite. You said that to believe in evolution without God, no, everything is by chance, it's all happenstance, and to believe that the DNA sequences could have just created themselves and so forth, it would be like taking the Scrabble board and just throwing out the different spaces, the different lettering, and somehow it would spell out the Declaration of Independence perfectly, which, by the way, as an analogy, is an interesting one. But, of course, if you play Scrabble at all, you know there's not enough letters to give us the Declaration of Independence. But I thought that was an interesting analogy. And the point is that, you know, the chances of evolution are basically nil.
Well, this is the big discovery of modern biology, and that is that at the foundation of life, in even the very simplest cells, we have discovered digital information stored in the DNA molecule. And these long sections of genetic characters, or genetic, they're called nucleotide bases, are functioning like alphabetic characters in a written language. And so that raises the really a fundamental question, which is, where did all that information come from? We know from our experience that information always arises from an intelligent source, whether we're talking about a section of software or a paragraph in a book or a hieroglyphic inscription or a signal going over the radio. Information is a product of mind, and the discovery of information in the DNA molecule, as well as an exquisite realm of digital nanotechnology for processing that information inside cells, bespeaks the activity of a designing intelligence. It points to a mind, not a material process.
How do unbelievers, like unbelieving scientists, answer that question then? Where does that information come from?
Well, right now there's just a great big question mark over the whole discipline of what's called origin of life studies. And that the reason for that is, there are many reasons for that, but the biggest reason, in my judgment, is that biochemists have not been able to explain the origin of the information necessary to build even a simple living cell. So we don't know how life started from the so-called prebiotic soup, And the big reason that the big problem with explaining that event, the origin of life, is that we have no account of the origin of the information necessary to produce it.
Can you give us an analogy of how complex is a simple cell?
Well, I live in Seattle, and we have here all these great information IT companies, Microsoft and so forth, but we also have great manufacturing companies like Boeing. And at the Boeing plant, the engineers use a technology called CAD/CAM, Computer Assisted Design and Engineering, where they will sit at a console, write code. The code will go down a wire. It will be translated into a machine language that can be read at a manufacturing arm or center. And then that information will be used at the manufacturing center to, for example, place rivets on the airplane wing in exactly the right place in accord with the engineer's specifications. So you have digital information directing the construction of a mechanical system. That is very similar to what's going on inside the cell. You have information in DNA. It's translated into an RNA version of the code. It's read at a manufacturing center called a ribosome, and then it produces the proteins and protein machines that keep cells alive. So we're finding an echo of our most advanced high-tech digital information technology inside living cells. It's phenomenal.
And the universe itself, you've said in an article in the New York Post that we live, well, you said that physicists have said since the 1960s we live in a so-called Goldilocks universe. What does that mean, and what are the implications of that?
Well, right. We don't just have evidence of design in living systems. We have evidence of design in the very fabric of physics and chemistry. If you look at the fundamental parameters of physics, the expansion rate of the universe and the force that drives that, the force of gravity, the force of electromagnetism, the strength of those forces, the ratios between them, the masses of the elementary particles. Time and time again, as physicists have investigated these parameters, they've discovered that they fall within very narrow tolerances. That is to say, that if they were a little bit different one way or another, then life in the universe would be impossible. And there's a suite of these different parameters, and many of them are incredibly improbable that they would have that the parameters would have fallen in these tiny tolerances or tiny ranges. And so some physicists now describe our universe as a Goldilocks universe, where everything, the forces are not too strong, not too weak, the expansion of the universe is not going too fast or too slow, the masses of the particles are not too heavy, not too light, everything is just right. And one famous physicist, Sir John Polkinghorne, a British physicist from Cambridge University, was once asked, well, what do you make of this? And he says, well, I don't say that the atheists are stupid. I just say that the theism, belief in God, provides a more satisfying explanation. The fine-tuning seems to suggest a fine-tuner.
Wow. I think that was the gentleman that won an award, if I'm not mistaken, a Templeton Award. It's interesting, though, Dr. Meyer, because I saw, just even doing a little search on the internet on this, I saw a description of intelligent design. People who believe in intelligent design, they call it a quote-unquote pseudo-scientific theory. Well, in Greek, pseudo means lie. So intelligent design was being described in a Wikipedia article, by the way, about you, frankly. So I just thought that was interesting. Your comments?
I highly complimented.
Okay, but go ahead and, you know, why well, do you right. believe in intelligent design?
Yeah, this is all based on a definition of science. If you say something is pseudoscience, you're saying it's something that doesn't qualify as science. But to say that, you have to have a definition of science in your mind. And the definition that the Wikipedia writers have is one that's common among, for example, Darwinian biologists. And that's the idea that if you're going to be a scientist, you must limit yourself to strictly materialistic explanations for everything. That's known as the principle of methodological naturalism. But the problem with that definition of science is that it forecloses or precludes scientists from following the evidence wherever it might naturally lead, because there are phenomena we know of that are produced by intelligent agents. If you go into the British Museum and look at the Rosetta Stone, those three different sets of inscriptions that archaeologists have translated and recognized in each a different language saying the same thing, if you apply the principle of methodological naturalism, you would have to attribute those etchings to wind and erosion or some physical or materialistic process, when in fact we know the ultimate explanation for the origin of those information-bearing inscriptions is a scribe, a mind. We know that there are certain things that minds can produce that matter doesn't produce, and one of those is information. So when we find information at the foundation of life, and even the simplest living cell, the best explanation, the inference that follows from the evidence, is that a mind played a role. Now, the Wikipedia writers and many scientists want to say, well, you can't make that inference. That's against the rules. But we think that the rules of science should be follow the evidence where it leads, not limit the possible explanations to ones which confirm someone's preconceived idea of reality.
All right, excellent. The subtitle of your book is Three Scientific Discoveries That Reveal the Mind Behind the Universe. I'm sure you've touched on some of these already, but go ahead and clarify for us these three scientific discoveries and elaborate if you.
Exactly. We've talked about two already, the discovery of digital information in living cells. That's discovery number one from biology. Secondly, we've talked about the fine-tuning of the laws and constants of physics and also what are called the initial conditions of the universe. The basic parameters of physics have been finely tuned against all odds and for no underlying theoretical reason to produce a life-conducive universe, suggesting a cosmic fine-tuner. And then the third class of evidence is the one that I actually addressed at the very beginning of the book, and that's the discovery that the universe itself, the universe of matter and energy and even space and time, had a definite beginning a finite time ago. And that suggests, first of all, a kind of convergence with the biblical testimony, which affirms that there was a beginning to the universe. But it also suggests the basis of a reformulated, an ancient argument for the existence of God known as the cosmological argument. Whatever begins to exist must have a cause, says this argument. The universe began to exist, therefore it must have a cause. Since all causes are separate from from themselves, there must be a cause that transcends the universe. And the ancient philosophers said we call that cause God. In fact, I think when you look at the competing possible metaphysical or worldview explanations for a universe that begins from literally nothing physical, theism provides the best overall explanation. Materialism fails as a worldview. Because if matter itself begins some finite time ago, then before that there would be no matter to do the causing. If matter has an origin, then prior to that there is no matter that could explain where the matter came from.
Now, we have about 1 minute left. I want you to go ahead and give your website other than discovery.org, or if there's an additional one. But I do want you to answer this question. I understand some scientists are actually turning to using aliens as their hypothesis to explain, you know, how that. Okay, 1 minute.
Yeah, sure. The website is returnofthegodhypothesis.org. Returnofthegodhypothesis.com. One of the really interesting facets of this debate is that the atheistic side is becoming more and more desperate. The popular impression is that the theists are on the intellectual defensive, but it's just the opposite. In order to explain these big three discoveries, the universe had a beginning, it's been fine-tuned from the beginning, and there's been digital code entering our biosphere since the beginning. Atheists and materialistic scientists have resorted to explanations involving space aliens or multiple undetectable universes or abstract mathematical castles in the air. Very convoluted explanations, very, very unparsimonious or unsimple in the Occam's razor sense. And so one of the arguments I made in the book is that theism provides the best overall explanation. If indeed there is a theistic God, then we see exactly what we would expect to see in the natural world. And that explanation is much simpler than those that are being offered by scientific materialists or atheists. One of the really bizarre explanations that has been proposed is the idea that they're alien designers, but of course, who have planted life on planet Earth. But of course, that explanation just pushes the question back to the unanswered question of how did life start on the planet that eventually evolved into an alien designer? You still have to explain the origin of the information. And no alien designer explains the origin of the universe or the fine-tuning of the universe would have been present from the very beginning of the universe and upon which its very existence would depend.
Dr. Meyer, thanks so much for being with us. Returnofthegodhypothesis.com. All the best to you.
Thank you, Jerry. Thanks for having me on.